The Outlaws and the Triplets. William's aunt's invitation was looked upon by William's family as little short of providential. Great, therefore, was their jubilation. Then their jubilation died away. William refused to go and stay with Aunt Jane. He said that he didn't want to miss Ethel's tennis party. He was hurt and amazed by the general attitude. "Well, why do you want me to go? Of course I won't upset things. I keep telling you I'm going to help. I don't like Aunt Jane anyway. She kept asking me history dates last time I saw her. I'd much rather stay and help Ethel with her party. Liven it up." In the end, his family, worn out by argument, surrendered, and Mrs. Brown wrote to Aunt Jane a letter of such consummate tact that Aunt Jane replied, saying she thought it was just a little selfish of dear Ethel to insist on William staying at home so that he could help her with the preparations for her party, but that she would expect dear William as soon as Ethel could manage without him, and all they would have to do would be to send her a wire. Gloomily, therefore, Ethel surrendered to fate. It so happened that William had formed no actual plans for enlivening the party. He merely considered it his duty to get a little more go into it than there'd been at her last one. On the day before the party, William was on his way to meet his outlaws. He meant to discuss the situation with them fully. They were waiting for him in the road outside Henry's house. All but Henry, whose voice was heard within the garden, raised in passionate altercation with his mother.
"Well, why must I? Why can't someone else take it out? I keep telling you, dear, Nanny's gone to bed with a headache and I can't leave the house. You ought to like taking out your little sister in her pram, Henry. There never was such a sweet baby. Hundreds of little boys would give anything to have her for a sister." "Well, I wish they could have her then, that's all," said Henry bitterly. "Oh, all right, I'll take her." "That's a good boy. Keep her out about half an hour and remember to call at the grocer's for the tea."
Walking slowly and gloomily, Henry came down the garden path pushing a pram. His three friends surveyed him without enthusiasm, but they did not intend to forsake him. They walked along the road in a gloomy silence. It was William's idea to pretend that it was a gun carriage. They pushed it in turns and ran with it at a quick trot. Its occupant seemed to find the movement soporific and was fast asleep by the time they'd reached the grocer's. Ginger had had tuppence given to him by his mother for rolling the lawn, and they all went into the grocer's to help him choose some sweets. Henry bought the tea and put it for safety in his pocket. Then they chose some boiled sweets of a particularly cheap and colourful brand. They next held a spirited exchange of grimaces with the grocer's boy, which degenerated into a scuffle and brought down a pyramid of tins of boot blacking. The grocer chased them out of the shop, and they emerged into the road feeling cheered and exhilarated. It was Ginger's turn to push the pram, and he seized it with a new vigour.
"Look here," said William. "I've not thought of anything exciting to do at Ethel's party tomorrow yet. Let's all try and think of something."
"Let's all dress up as robbers and dash in at them," suggested Ginger.
"Let's set some mice loose among them," said Henry.
"Let's put a grass snake on the tea table," said Douglas. "That'd scare 'em stiff."
"No, I want something they'd enjoy," said William.
"Well, they'd enjoy all those things," said Ginger. "They'd enjoy talking about them and telling other people about them afterwards, even if they didn't enjoy them at the time."
They had reached Henry's house now, and Henry, stopping short, began to gaze with startled interest at the sleeping baby.
"I say," he cried excitedly, "that's not ours."
"Not your what?" said William.
"Not our baby," said Henry. "Ours doesn't look like that."
"Well, there isn't any difference in babies," said William. "They all look just the same. You can't possibly tell any difference."
"I can," protested Henry vehemently. "I tell you, this one isn't ours, and its clothes are different anyway."
William realised the force of his argument.
"It isn't our pram either," said Henry, who was now closely examining the vehicle. "It's quite different."
"There was another pram outside the shop," said Ginger thoughtfully. "Perhaps I took the wrong one."
"I'll run back and see if ours is there," said Henry.
He ran off down the road and soon reappeared, pale with horror.
"There isn't any pram at all there now," he said.
"Look here," said William, "I expect someone took yours by mistake. I expect it's always happening. I'll go round the village and try and find yours."
"And I'll go round the other way," said Ginger.
They set off with a purposeful air in opposite directions. Henry and Douglas were left with the pram and the sleeping stranger. Henry kept throwing uneasy glances through the hedge.
"I say," he said, "I'm scared stiff she'll come out to get the bag of tea and see it's the wrong one. She'll go mad. Put it here where the hedge is nice and thick, and I'll go in and give her the tea and tell her we're taking the baby out for a bit of a walk."
Cautiously, he entered the gate. Soon the voice of his mother was wafted through the hedge to the waiting Douglas.
How could you be so careless, Henry? I shall never, never, never trust you with her again. Yes, Mrs. Hanshaw brought her back a minute ago, found her outside the grocer's shop. You simply aren't fit to be trusted with anything.
Henry rejoined Douglas in the road, and they stood gazing at each other in helpless dismay. At that moment there reappeared the figure of William, jauntily wheeling another pram.
"I say," he called exultantly, "I bet this is it. I found it outside another shop."
At the same moment there appeared from the other direction the figure of Ginger. He, too, was wheeling a pram. He did not at first see William. He called out,
"It's all right. I've got it. I found it outside a house."
Henry looked from one to the other, a nightmarish grin on his face.
"Which is yours?" said William. "I bet mine is."
"I bet mine is," put in Ginger. "Neither is," said Henry. "We've got ours. Someone brought it back."
They gazed at the three prams with their sleeping cargoes, and the situation in all its horror gradually dawned upon them.
"Gosh!" said William. "Three!"
"We'd better take 'em back," said Ginger faintly. "My mother was mad about ours," said Henry.
There came to William and Ginger a vision of three raging mothers. At that moment the voice of Henry's mother was heard urgently calling him, and with some relief he left the pram-infested scene. Douglas, Ginger and William were left, each with his attendant infant. They looked at each other helplessly. At that moment a boy came alongside them, pushing a pram in a detached and hasty manner.
"Hello," he said. "You've got to take yours to the baby show too."
William made a non-committal sound.
"Well, I think it's the limit, don't you?" said the boy. "I said, why should I take it? And she said that she's entered it, and so it had to go, but she's got a bad headache and couldn't take it. Said it was sure to get a prize."
He continued his hurried progress. He walked quickly and airily by the side of the pram, keeping two fingers only upon the handle to steer it, and determinedly looking in the opposite direction, as if hoping to convince those he met that he'd no connection whatever with it. Somewhat cheered by this spectacle, William, Ginger and Douglas began to follow after him in a row, each pushing his pram.
"A baby show," said William. "That'll be fine. We can just put them with the other prams and leave them there."
The boy in front, with a deft and practised movement of his wrist, had turned his pram into the gateway of a large garden. There, on the lawn, was a serried row of prams. The outlaws put theirs at the end as unobtrusively as possible. Several groups of women were standing about on the lawn, talking. Ginger and Douglas crept away in their best Red Indian style. William was about to follow, when he heard himself addressed in a sharp, imperious voice.
"Are you in charge of these prams?"
An elegant woman stood in front of him, pointing a pair of lorgnettes at him. The proprietary attitude in which William was leaning over his pram handles made the charge a difficult one to deny.
Yes, he said guardedly. "I mean, I'm sort of in charge of them."
"Well, why aren't there any numbers on them, then?"
"I don't know," said William. The woman turned to another harassed-looking woman behind her.
"The whole thing's been most disgracefully mismanaged. Here are three more prams without numbers. Were no numbers sent?" she said to William.
No, said William. A third woman came up and meekly affixed numbers to the prams. The first woman was looking at William rather doubtfully.
"Did you say you were in charge of all three prams?" she said.
"Yes," replied William.
"I suppose one of them is your little brother," she went on.
"They all are," said William.
It was never William's way to go in for half measures. The lady looked at them still more doubtfully.
"Triplets?" she said.
William again made his non-committal noise.
"How curious to have them in three separate prams. You couldn't have brought them all, surely?"
"Well, yes, I did," said William. "I push one pram for a bit along the road, and then I fetch the second up to it, and then I fetch the third, and then I start again on the first."
"How very strange," said the woman.
"Have you brought the form?"
"The form?" said William.
"There," said the woman again. "Another muddle. The thing's been completely mismanaged. Give me a form, please."
The meek woman handed her a form.
"And I ought to have been told there'd be triplets. They're a class by themselves, of course. I'll fill in the form now. Just answer the questions. Now, what illnesses have they had?"
"Lumbago," said William, remembering the complaint that had kept his father in bed for a day last week.
"What?"
Not lumbago," said William hastily. I mean, only one of them had lumbago, just a bit. No, the illness that the other two had is,
He paused a moment. What was that thing that had kept Colonel Fortescue in bed all last holidays?
"Oh, yes, I know, gout." "Rubbish," said the woman. "Children of that age couldn't have gout." "The doctor said he'd never known one have it before," argued William. At the mention of the doctor, the woman became less sure of her ground. "Well, all I can say is I've never heard of it," she said, and passed on hastily to the next question. "Now, what have they been brought up on?"
"Brought up on," said William.
"Yes, what do they eat?"
"Oh," said William, comprehending. "Well, for breakfast they have sausages."
"Sausages?" said the lady, horrified.
William realised that sausages were wrong.
"Only one of them has sausages," he said reassuringly. "The others have chops."
"Chops?"
Evidently chops was wrong too.
"I only meant one of the other two has chops," said William hastily. "This one has kippers."
"Kippers?"
At that moment, one of the triplets awoke with a yell, and at once the other two, roused from sleep, joined in the chorus. Also, William, turning sharply, saw three angry-looking women entering the gate. They were obviously the mothers on the track of their missing young. Without a second's hesitation, William dived through the hedge and ran as fast as he could in the direction of his home. He had no doubt at all that the mothers would discover who he was and where he lived, but it would take a little time.
"Mother," he said breathlessly, entering the drawing-room, "I'll go and stay with Aunt Jane if I can go at once."
Mrs. Brown looked bewildered.
"I don't know how long a feeling like this is going to last. It doesn't last very long, generally. If I don't get off to Aunt Jane's now, this minute, it'll have gone."
Mrs. Brown's thoughts went to Ethel. Ethel would find it very difficult to forgive her if she let slip this chance, appearing so miraculously and at the last minute, of a Williamless tennis party.
"Well, very well, dear," she said. "I'll go and pack your things. We'll send the wire from the station."
William was standing by the window. "Do be quick," he said. "I can feel that feeling going already."
In an incredibly short space of time, Mrs. Brown was downstairs with his bag. They hurried to the end of the road and just caught the bus. As they sat there, waiting for it to start, three angry-looking women wheeling prams were seen to turn into the lane that led to William's home. Mrs. Brown watched them with interest.
"I wonder where they're going," she said. "Why, they're going to our house. How funny. I wonder what they want."
But William was gazing dreamily in front of him, as if he did not hear her, and at that moment the bus started. They just had time to wire to William's aunt before catching the train. William then sank back into his corner of the carriage with a sigh of relief. His mother would be on her way home, where the three angry women awaited her. They couldn't do anything to him now, of course, and they'd probably have forgotten all about it by the time he came home. It was a pity about Ethel's party. It would just have to be the dull sort of affair it usually was. And Aunt Jane's, well, she was jolly dull, of course. But still, he might manage to have quite a decent time. There was a pond in her garden in which he could be shipwrecked from a raft, and there was a fat Pekingese in the opposite house, into whose ordered life considerable excitement might be introduced. Yes. William began to look forward, with feelings of pleasurable anticipation, to his visit to Aunt Jane.